Darkwraith Publishing presents the Illinois State Collegiate Compendium, academic lectures in business and economics. This is Business Finance, FIL 240, Section 4 for Spring Semester 2015. Lecture 14, delivered on March 3, 2015. The title of this lecture is Review for Exam 1.
Today, review for Exam 1. I will spend time telling you what I know about the exam. I know a little about it. And then from there, I'm going to stop telling you about the exam, and it will be your turn to ask me questions about the exam. You say, well, is this going to be on the exam? If it's not, I'll say no. Don't waste your time on that. If you say, can you show me how to do this or that? Yes, unless you're asking me to do something ridiculously complicated, like work out your entire life's career path. Here, I won't do that, but if it's something like, oh, can you price a bond or something for me, quote a bond, yeah, I'll do that for you. I don't hide anything. I'm going to telegraph my punches to you, and if you're still standing at the end of round one, well, that's great. We can go on to the second exam later. Well, actually, I could put up the exam on the overhead if you wanted to see it. Oh, yeah, go ahead, teacher. There have been several times when I didn't realize I had it on the computer and it was showing up there on the screen. I didn't know. I was just talking my ass off. And, you know, people were just writing like this. And I, boy, they were really taking, oh, ew, okay. Let's not have that happen today, okay? Off. My exams are all very similar. There are three parts to the exam. Hear me well. Okay, because I will play this podcast back to you if you say, well, you didn't say that or I didn't hear that. Okay, first of all, three parts to the exam. I'll first tell you what they are and then I'll go back through them in more detail. Part one is multiple choice or multiple guess if in some case. Okay, multiple choice. Some of them are true and false. Some of them are actual quick math workout kinds of questions. Some of them are just facts. Which of the following is true? Which of the following is false? How much is the value here? What is the value of this or that? As a rule, that's where most people have their greatest difficulty is the multiple choice. And the reason I do these is that a lot of you will end up taking certification exams and licensing exams that are multiple choice based. And that's why I do this, even though it is the most difficult part of the exam, and it really doesn't measure deep critical thinking, but at the same time, it's going to be part of your lives after college and in a lot of college courses here, too. So part one is multiple choice. There are 20 questions, multiple choice. Those are 2 points each. So in other words, that's 40% of your exam score is right there. Part two of the exam is workout problems. The math part, the quantitative part, total of 40 points spread. Now, some of the problems have multiple, more than one part to them, so it really doesn't help to tell you how many points or how many questions there are because some are just one question, some are part A, part B, part C, but it's 40 points. And the last part of the exam is short answers. Short answers. You choose 4 of 5. Each worth 5 points. You do not answer all 5 and then say, just give me the points for the best ones I answered. No, I will eat your ass if you try to answer 5. I've got 200 of your exams to grade. No, don't irritate me that way. Remember, I am grading these with a giant pot of coffee, 3 cats, and a very, very generous bottle of single malt. Okay? Don't trifle with me, okay? And I'll go back through and I'll give you some very clear instructions and rules on that part of the exam. And also, don't forget, I actually do have a bullshit stamp. and I have just had it re-inked. Back to part one. Now, part one, as I said, there will be some that will be like math, quick math workout. Like, I'll tell you right now, I'm going to have you quote me a treasury, the yield on a one-year treasury. We did that very early in the semester. You had it on a quiz. Quote, I'll give you a quote on a treasury, and you find the yield. This is the way I'll do it. Just like we did, I think that was like the second or third lecture. Just a really quick calculation. Well, this treasury security, one-year treasury bill, is quoting at 98.25. What's the yield on this treasury? Remember how to do that, and there you got 2 points. 2 points. You won't go home empty-handed. I'll also give you, I'll have you figure out a quick, dirty, find the price of a share of preferred stock. You remember I did that in class and I gave you that quick exercise. I'll tell you, okay, it's preferred like PRN, 1.4% cumulative preferred, and the market is discounting it at 1.3% right now, the dividends. Okay, you remember how to do that? If I say, okay, well, let me do this one. I just told you the PRN, cumulative preferred, and let's say the par value is $120. And it's cumulative preferred 1.4%. The market's currently discounting those dividends at 1.3%. Is there anything you can tell me about the price? Oh, yeah, there is. Nope, not me. Anything? I just told you. PRN, cumulative preferred, par value $120 a share. It's 1.4% preferred, 1.4% preferred, par value $120 per share. Market's discounting its dividends at 1.3% right now. You know something that I would be looking for on a multiple choice question. What do you know?
Premium to par.
Premium to par. You know that the price is more than, not the discount rate, price, is more than, what was the par value of it? So if it's selling at a premium to par, you know that the price is more than. There you go. That's what's the kind of thing I would ask you on a multiple choice exam, as a multiple choice question. I wouldn't even ask you to find me the price there. I just ask you, is it a premium? Is it selling at a premium to par? Is it selling at par? Is it selling at a discount to par? And that requires you don't do the math. You just recognize, oh, the coupon, the dividend is greater than the discount rate. So it sells at a premium to par. Oh, a mother's work is never done. I'll have you find an effective yield in multiple choice. Simple math calculation. You may have a 4x6 note card. Make what's on it relevant. You are also allowed to have that formula sheet. You can download it from your resources and materials tab. No writing on that other than what's on the sheet itself. Nothing on that. But you can have that along too. Know the relationship between risk and return, between risk and expected return. Know the difference between systematic risk and non-systematic risk, diversifiable risk and non-diversifiable risk. Excuse me. Know the details of the Fed, the operations of the Fed. How many governors are there? How many voting members on the FOMC? All those kinds of things like that. How many voting members are permanent? How many served just 2-year temporary terms? The three tools of monetary policy, as I said, make sure you know that. Make sure you know what open market operations are. Terminology. Kind of moving in, moving from there. Like, for example, what is the federal funds rate? What's the difference between a capital market and a money market? Make sure you know that. Though I'm going to hit you on that in a couple of places on this exam, but here's one place where I tell you you're going to get a certain amount of money for your business or something like that, and I tell you how the deal's going to come down. You tell me what kind of market you're going into. Know the difference between a primary and a secondary market. Tell you a quick funny story that might help reinforce this idea of primary versus secondary. I had I was contacted by back in the day by what we call a playa these days. He said, I got a little consulting gig that I just don't want to handle right now because I'm up to my butt in other things. But this company wants to get listed. It's actually an old public company. It was delisted years ago. And these new owners have taken over and they want to get it listed again, a stock trading symbol and all that kind of stuff. And he said, can you do that? And I'd done these before. I got get ticker symbols. And I said, yeah, I'll do that. We'll get trading started again in this stock. It's probably going to be a thin market. It's going to be a pain in the butt to get it started. But we'll get a trading symbol and all that. Well, the company officials, some hot young shots, had the money to get a hold of this public shell, put their idea into it, and get the company started again. Got the company's trading symbol listed. And it came up one morning, sure enough, just like I promised it would, on the NASD quotation system. Guy calls me a couple hours later and says, this is great. Okay, when does the money start coming into our bank account? And it doesn't. This is trading. This is people own the stock, people want to buy the stock, doing their deals. This has nothing to do with the company. This is the secondary market. That's what ticker symbols are all about, and that's what stock markets are all about. And he was absolutely horrified. I've paid you all this money, and we're not getting any money out of it? No, this is, that would require that you do an offering of stock. That's a primary. That way, people are buying the stock from the company, and the company's getting the money. But this that's happening now, that's secondary market. That's just owners and wanters of the stock doing their deals back and forth. That's what all the New York Stock Exchange and NASD is all about. Well, he threatened to sue me and all of that kind of stuff, and I thought, please do. I could use a little excitement in my life, but that's a good way to see that secondary versus primary market. Secondary market, the company's really not a part of that. Well, they can be in a way if they buy their own stock or try to affect the price, but really that's just out there. Primary market is where the company is actually selling its securities. So make sure you know the difference between primary and secondary. Know the difference between a money market and a capital market. Make sure you know what the federal funds market is. Make sure you know all those different markets. Like, for example, have you ever shopped at Fresh Market? Fresh Market has very good food, but it has nothing to do with finance, so you've got to move on from that. We can go there later for some great steaks. Know the different kinds of business entities, sole proprietorship, partnership, corporation. Any business can have common stock. Is that correct? Say it. Did you say, I don't know, or no?
I said, I don't know.
Okay. Any business can have common stock outstanding, right? So, you, sir, decide that you are going to start Earl's Daycare and Baptist Reading Room. Okay. It's a one-man show. Do you have common stock outstanding?
Yes.
No, you don't. What happens if you try to sell stock without becoming a public corporation? What happens to you? No. If you try to sell stock without a registration statement, without being a corporation, the Federal Securities and Exchange Commission, working with the DOJ, will make you Bubba's hard-time old lady in a federal facility. In the fresh meat aisle. You can't have stock unless you are a corporation. A partnership doesn't have stock. An LLC doesn't have stock. A sole proprietorship doesn't have stock. Only a corporation has stock. And even then, a corporation's stock isn't publicly tradable unless you go through the whole registration process, doing a public offering or back registering private placement stock that you issued on pursuant to an exemption on Reg D or Reg A or something like that. So, don't let that problem trip you up. I have my company that I have now, my landscape photography company, it started out as just a sole proprietorship. under those auspices, there was no the concept of common stock. It just didn't mean anything. There wasn't any corporation there. However, once I incorporated, I immediately had to declare a globe of stock that the company could, over its life, issue. I said 1,000 shares. Then I had to issue some of those shares to myself so that I would be an owner of that. I issued enough so that even if I sell some, I'm still the majority shareholder. But that doesn't, the concept of stock in it, in this company, didn't exist until it was a corporation. And even now, I can't sell that stock to anyone. I can't trade that stock on a public market simply because it has not been registered with the Securities and Exchange Commission. It was issued to me under an exemption that has to do with giving stock to the owners. Now, I'm going to hit you with one more robust quantitative problem in the multiple choice section. It will be very similar to the one that I did in class, where I had a level annuity that went on for a bunch of years, but it started a couple of years from now. So you have to pull that level annuity back to, like, year two, and then take the lump sum and bring it on all the way back. Go back to that problem in your notes and in the podcast. The one I'm giving you is very similar to it. So if you can do the one that we did in class, you can do this one. Promise you. Part two. Tonight around 9 o'clock, I am going to post in ReggieNet, in the Resources and Materials tab, a document. It will just be some numbers and some words, maybe. I won't tell you what those numbers and words are for. But if you look at those, you'll say, I know what problems he's going to ask. And then you will do the calculations necessary so that you have those numbers on your note card so that when you come here to the exam, you are not trying to do those on the exam. Because if you try to do those on the exam, you will not make it through the exam, quite possibly. Or you will be under such pressure that you'll make mistakes. It never ceases to amaze me. I have people who blow these questions. This is like sure points. Because you've got all the time. You've got a couple of days to get the answers fixed up. And people blow it. And I say, well, how did you had these? You did these? No, I didn't. Well, yeah, that was in ReggieNet. You never told us that. Bitch, yes, I did. God. Okay, so going on with the exam, you're going to have a problem where you calculate some financial ratios. Now, if you're a connect the dots kind of person, what I just stopped talking about, what I just said here, should come together in your mind. I'll also have you find business risk, contribution of operating leverage, and contribution of financial leverage. Again, if you connect the dots of what I talked about and what I just mentioned here, you'll say, oh my God, he's given us all of the information for two hard questions. He's given it to us 2 days before the exam, and all I have to do is get those problems done in my spare time while I'm eating, while I'm on the toilet, whatever, and then I'll have the hardest questions he's going to throw at me done. Okay. Now, moving on, I'm going to give you one like I did on that. Remember that you did that, I handed out that worksheet in class, and you filled out part of it, and then you took the rest of it home. And there was that problem on the back page where you found revenues, cost of goods sold, found net income, all that kind of stuff. You remember that table? I gave the numbers kind of out of order, and then you had to work your way down and get it. Yeah, that'll be on there. And the tax tables will be at the back, so to get net income, you're going to have to calculate the tax from the tax tables, okay? Not too hard to do, but it'll be a little bit of calculation. Watch yourself on it. You might want to do it a couple of times. Well, you're going to have plenty of time for this exam. Take your time, then go back and check your calculations, because it's just a very basic financial income statement. What were the revenues? What was gross income? What was the earnings before interest and taxes? What was the EBT? What was the net income? The one that could get you in a little bit of hot water would be, what's net income? Well, that means you're going to have to take EBT minus taxes, and that means that you're going to have to calculate the tax on that EBT, which means you're going to have to go back to the table that's in the appendix to this exam to find to calculate the tax, unless you've memorized the tax tables, and if you have, you're weird. You know, that's not a hard question, but it does require that you stop and get through calculating the marginal tax rates on the different levels of income and all that. Okay, I'm going to have you find the yield to maturity on a bond. Going to have you find the yield, the quote on a bond. And I'm also going to have you find the yield to call on the bond. Just like we did in class. This is pure calculator work. Remember, semi-annual coupons. Don't come up here and say, do we assume semi-annual coupons? Because I will eat your butt. Yes, semi-annual. And as far as the rest of it goes, it's just putting it into the calculator. If you want to do another one, also, another thing. If I say, tell me the price of the bond, that's a dollar sign. If I tell you to quote the bond, don't put a dollar sign. Because if you do that in real practice in some case, you're going to tell someone that a $1,200 bond is $120. If I tell you to quote it, write me a number. Everything to two decimal places when you report. Use more than that when you're calculating. Probably four is a minimum. But when you report, everything is to two decimal places in the final answer that you give me. Don't impress me with 25 decimal places. Yes, we all have calculators that can do that. The house rule is two decimal places. Don't violate the rule with one decimal place. Another thing, if you come up with the answer 1.2, report 1.20. The reason is this. If you report 1.2, the consumer of your information is going to see that you calculated to one decimal place of accuracy. If you report 1.20, I know you were calculating to two decimal places of accuracy. Do you see the logic of that? I mean, even though you're going to get your calculator says 1.200000, well, I'm going to put 1.2 down because I don't have time to write an extra zero. Yes, you do. Put that extra zero down because that flags the final consumer of your information that you are doing two decimal places of accuracy in your calculations. Okay? Now, let me say also about units of measure. Units of measure. In ratios, make sure you give me the correct units of measure. Don't leave units of measure off. Dollar signs, percentages, time symbols. Remember in the ratios, percent changes from period to period, those are obviously percents. Also, things like gross margin, net margin, those are percentages. The ones that are time symbols, in other words, they are factors. You're calculating an actual factor. Can you remember some of them that were actual time symbols, not percentages, in the ratios that we did? There's one that's obvious, times interest earned. EBT divided by earnings before interest and taxes divided by interest. That number is how many times over the earnings before interest and taxes can pay the interest. What else is there, though? What else was a time? Do you remember? What is it? Quick, yeah. All those liquidities, the quick, the current, the quick, and the burn. The current, the quick, and the burn are all timeses. Asset turnover is a times. How many times over did you turn over your assets? That's a times. Most of the ratios are percentages, but some of them are times. Like P to E ratio, that's actually a times. How many times over is the price reflecting the actual earnings? Just make sure you get those ratios. Give me the right number because you don't want to lose a point just because you didn't put down a dollar sign or a percent or a times correctly. Stay frosty. Just get the ratios done. You're not going to be under any time pressure to do those ratios. Get them right. Not any, well, a couple of days of pressure, but that's not really pressure. Hint, 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 hint. Okay, moving on. I'm going to have you find the price of a share of common stock, just like I did in class, just like you had on that practice sheet. Make sure you use the capital asset pricing model, because part A, what discount rate are you going to use? Well, that's where you apply the cap M to get the discount rate. Part B, what's the price of the stock? That's where you use that discount rate and the other information in the problem to give me the price of the stock. It's very straightforward. You shouldn't have a problem with it. It's straight up just very basic math. There's no calculus. Be thankful for that. And then you're also going to, I'm going to have you find a payment on a loan. You know how to do that. That's just calculus. That's that apps, finance, TVM solver. Find the payments on a loan. And I'll also have you find out what the effective yield is on that loan. And then the last thing I'll have you do is, like I did in class, kind of turn the problem around and say, all right, here's my budget. What I could afford is a monthly payment. And then back your way in to find out how much of a loan you could take out. Just like I did in class. You remember that one where I said, okay, I did it with a car? Very practical. Probably one of the most practical things you get out of this class before you actually get into heavy finance work is finding loan payments. And this is where you do it. Find out how much your payment will be on a loan, what the effective rate on the loan is, and finally, discovering the what kind of a loan you could actually take out. Okay, I can budget this month this much a month. What kind of a loan can I take out with this budget for a loan payment? Basic, just essential financial planning. That's part two. Yeah, go ahead. Say that again. Part A. Okay, I'm going to give you all the information. First of all, to find, you know, the formula for finding the stock is D1 over K minus G to find the price of a share of common stock. Well, you've got to find the K, the discount rate. The way we do that is with the capital asset pricing model. So I'm going to give you all the ingredients for the K plus beta times K sub M minus K sub F. I'm going to give you all the ingredients. So part A, tell me what discount rate you're going to use. Part B, all right, now that you've told me the discount rate you're going to use, do so. What's the price of the stock? The practical side of that is that this way I can give you a little tiny bit of extra of partial credit if you blew the discount rate, but that's the right, that stock price is the stock price if that discount rate were used. In other words, most of the points are going to be on finding the stock price. Fewer of the points would be on finding the discount rate. Let's say that you found the discount rate, but you were wrong. You applied the cap M wrong, or your brain farted or something like that. Okay, now you're going into the second part where you're going to obviously get the stock price wrong. And so, okay, you got it wrong, but that's because you got the discount rate wrong. Now I back up and say, if that discount rate was the right one, would this be the right stock price? Okay, it would. So I'll burn you on the discount rate. You screwed it up, but you used it right to get the stock price. Okay, that's why I do it as a two-parter. And don't be really, really obvious on me. Here's something I see, maybe in about 5 exams every semester. Someone gets the discount rate wrong, but gets the stock price right. How does that happen? If you're thinking that it is something that is coincidental or there is a nice explanation for it, you are wrong. Anyway, last part of the exam. Part 3. I give you 5 essay questions. Each one is a one-sentence answer. One sentence. Don't give me a bunch of sentences. Well, he'll figure out what I'm saying here. No, I won't. I'll just stop at one sentence, and I'll hit my bullshit stamp on the rest of it, and whatever you got right in the first sentence is all the points you'll get. And don't put 2 sentences and then put a comma between them to make them look like one sentence. I was an English teacher. Don't trifle with me. In this, you are communicating in a formal business manner. Your spelling is proper. Don't use texting language. I had a girl just flip out at me. Just because you don't like texting language because you're old. Oh, oh. And I said, how old do you think I am? What, are you like 70? Damn, no. It's because in the business world, we do not like you to put little ampersands, and instead of an and, you put a plus. Don't do that. You are formally communicating. In the business world, we don't have time to read long-winded explanations. I am your information consumer. Assume that I am educated, but I don't know everything about your texting language, and I don't want to know about your texting language, and I also don't know your abbreviations. So don't just say, the PV is. You write things out. Full sentence, you got four of them, and that's all there is to it. Say what you have to say to me and be done with it. Either you know the answer or you don't know the answer. And don't start as, and make it a complete sentence. I have had, it just amazes me how bad the English education is. Students think that starting a sentence with because, no, that's not. You lose a point if you try to start, if you have a sentence fragment. This is my effort to be a bitch with you, okay? And it's a reason for that is because you will stand out from the crowd in your business communication if you are writing like highly educated college students instead of writing like people from Decatur. I get so much flack for that. Every semester, my mom's from Decatur. Yeah, I know. I saw her at a truck stop, dude. You know? Here's what I do for you. I'm going to tell you about 12 possible essay problems. Almost all of them, not necessarily, I won't hit every one, but almost all of them, this list that I'm going to give as I walk around here, will be the ones that will be on the exam, okay? So that gives you sort of a frame. Otherwise, this could, I mean, I could just blow you away because there's so much content. If you think about how much ground has been covered in these lectures, I could come at you with just lots of different essays. So what I try to do is cabin that into a sort of a studyable set of possibilities. Like I said, there might be something on here, one or two that I haven't said directly, but I'm going to telegraph the punch as well as I think I should to give you a fighting chance on these, okay? So let me start with a couple of questions. What are the three kinds of money? Now for that answer, don't say M0, M1, M2. I'm asking for the kinds of money that there are. What is the relationship between risk and return? What is beta in finance? What are the three tools of monetary policy? Sorry, my daughter. She just got off duty in the Army, so she's calling Dad. What is meant by residual claim to the cash flow that shareholders have? What is meant by prior claim to the cash flows the bondholders have? List and explain three different costs that finance would consider that accounting would not. What is financial intermediation? And what are the three factors that go into it? What is the relationship between price and yield on a debt instrument? I'll give you one more. What is the difference between a bill, a note, and a bond? I'll just do one more. Just one more. This one isn't exactly one, but it is going. Some version of it will be on there. What is the term that describes when investors liquidate more risky securities to buy safer securities? What is the term for when investors liquidate positions in riskier securities in order to buy safer securities? Now remember, one complete, grammatically correct, spelled out properly sentence for each of these. Now if you look at these carefully, you will see these are not hardball, but you have to answer crisply. If you do that, I know you understand it. If you don't do that, I know you're trying to go five times around the barn to get to the outhouse. Now it's your turn. I want you to ask me. I'm done with what I have to tell you, and I have told you so much, I feel dirty. I feel cheap. So talk to me. What do you have to ask me? Yeah. Yeah, so you want me to answer? Oh, let me say something. You know, I'm going to give you that information sheet. Do not come to my office on Thursday and say, I just want to check my work with you and see if it's all right. That's an exam question. No, get away from me with that. I can't tell you that. But look, I'll do this, okay? Come here. I need you for a minute. Yeah. No, come here. Come here. No. I'm going to show you something. Now, there used to be a cereal, okay? It was, I can't remember the name of it, but the song always stuck in my head because this cereal was in the shapes of different colored animals. And so they came out with a new improved version of it that had orange mousse. So I went out in the field and I found some of this cereal. Now, the cereal song was, it was Critters was the cereal. Critters now has orange mousse, mousse, mousse. Critters now has orange mousse, call for orange mousse. Come here. You bake apple pies. Would you like to trade an apple pie for this orange mousse? Say yes. I've answered your question. Thank you. People are writing down there, the fuck? Do you understand now what I'm trying to do?
What about the other one? That was one.
Okay, now. Okay, Midas. King Midas. Okay? You know what King Midas's cool thing was? You don't remember King Midas? Mother of God. Do you know King Midas? Yeah, okay. So, I'm King Midas. Beam! He is gold. Now, I can take him for a pie. Did that answer part more?
Yeah, yeah.
Oh, okay. We're good. It's all good. Okay. And then there's one last kind where I take him. He is Groot. Say, I am Groot.
I am Groot.
I am Groot.
I am Groot.
No, I am Groot. I am Groot. My God, don't you know who Groot is?
Of course I do.
Okay, I am Groot. Okay, I am a paper manufacturer. Come here, Groot. Take you to the Federal Reserve. I just turned Groot into money.
That's usually one that he gets.
Well, you know, it was just because they asked me, we want someone who's, you know, who's not very intelligent. So I looked around, and here's this tree that's got a lot of sap coming out of it. So I found a sappy guy, and I made him into fiat money. Anything else? That's all I... Oh, yeah, go. Yield to maturity with a bond? Would you like a bond example? Yeah. Okay. Yield to maturity. I'm going to do one real quick. I just do one. Actually, I was hoping someone would project. Why is the projector on, but it says it's not, but I don't see anything? Okay. I'm going to write down, you do this, and then I'll let you leave. But I want you to... Is there some reason it sucks? Okay. Oh, yeah. You better bring a calculator. Oh, for God's sake, please bring a calculator. I beg you, bring a calculator. Looks like my projector isn't going to work. So so walk on this with me. I'm going to, because the projector is screwing the pooch right now. Wait. Oh, sweet. Oh. I thought the exam was up there for a second. Watch. Okay. Okay. Let me get a... No. Okay. Oh, I'm just testing you. Quit. J&T 3.85%, 2030. Is currently yielding. Three point 3.70%. Quote it. That's the first one. This is so much like, oh, and I'm going to put a little C. Put a little C here. J&T C. But that doesn't matter right now. Can you quote it for me? Apps Finance, TVM Solver, Apps Finance, TVM Solver. N, how many years to maturity? 15. So in the end, what do? 15 times 2, because everything is semi-annual that's going to happen with this debt instrument. Go down. I percent. What do you put in there? divided by 2. 3.7 divided by 2. Because the yield is going to be recalculated twice every year because payments are semi-annual. Remember I told you, semi-annual always. Now you go down, what's the next one? P, the price value. Well, that's what we need to do. So you go down, the payment. What are the payments on this? ...3.85% of always of the par value, $1,000. So that would be $38.50 divided by 2, because you'll get that in 2 installments every year. See that right there? That is where payment comes from. It's the coupon. The PMT is the coupon divided by, but as a dollar amount off face. Okay? Yeah. No, you take $38.50 divided by 2. Because it'll be $38.50 a year, but you're going to get it in 2 checks semi-annually. Yeah. So that thing right there, that's what goes in the payment slot divided by 2, but you've got to make it into a dollar amount. Make sure that you got a dollar amount there. Now, going down, FV is the face value. What is the face value of a bond? Do you remember what I said?
$1,000.
That's, you're good. Someday, 50 years from now, you're going to be walking on down a street in Chicago, and this old, old man's going to come up to you, and he's going to grab you. What's the face value of a bond? And you're going to answer... And I am going to be so proud of you because that's actually me, a homeless, Alzheimer-ridden geezer. The tube sticking out of his kidney is dripping. But I will be so proud of you and I'll die happy right there in front of you as the cops shoot me dead for littering my drip on the sidewalks of Chicago. Tease that old man. Okay. What do you, okay, now always go down there. Don't ever forget, go down to the end and make sure that, the bottom, and make sure that that toggle is on end. That could just kill you if you've done another problem where you had an annuity due and you forget to change it to end. Okay, now go up to the price value, go up to price value and hit alpha solve. What do you get? Well, what, 1,000? Is that what everyone gets? Is that what you put down? No. I asked you to quote. So what you write down is 101.72. No dollar sign. The quote is a tenth of the price. If I say give me the price, you give me a dollar sign and exactly what your calculator gave you. But if I say quote it, you give me a tenth of the price. No dollar sign. I will hold you again to account on putting in your proper units of measure. Go.
Now, what if we put it, technically it's 101 or 1017.149.
Oh, it was 0.149. Oh. Well, then, obviously, I've got to fail you on the whole exam, 149. So that rounds as a price to 15, but... I would take either in that one. I mean, I'm a jerk, but I'm not quite that much. I don't want you slashing my tires, okay? And I technically, actually, I should have asked that to begin with, string it out more, but technically it is 101.71. But 101.71 versus 101.72, you got to understand something, though, is that the difference in sometimes in these calculations, if you use annual instead of semi-annual, the numbers are not too far apart. They can be awfully close. So I will be a little touchy on how close, how far off you are. And in fact, in my answer sheet, I write, okay, if they use annual instead of semi-annual, this is the answer they get, so they lose this many points and all that kind of stuff. But in a case like that, I mean, that's so small. Yeah. Go ahead. Yeah.
When you say it's currently yielding, does that mean that 3.7%?
That's the I percent. In the next one, we're going to find out that yield if we know the quote. Okay? Yeah, go ahead. Leave those one. Now, you can use those to do these problems, but I have found over the years that if you don't know which one to use in which circumstances, you will get really wrong answers. So just leave those as one and do it my way. It's a little complicated, but it's better than the other way, at least in my experience. I will ask you one thing. Is this answer making sense? This is the answer you got. Does that mean that this bond is selling at a premium or a discount to par? A premium. Now we go over here. This bond is paying 3.85%. The market thinks it should pay 3.70%. So does our answer make sense? Reality check. It's not going to prove that you got the right answer, but it's sure going to make you more comfortable. Yeah, this coupon was paying more than the market said it should. I got an answer that was a premium to par. Yeah, that's a pretty good sign that at least I'm not going to lose all my points. I did something right on it. Now, that was finding the quote. Now, let's go back. Suppose JNT C, 3.85%, 2030, is quoting at 98.75. What is the yield to maturity? In this case, we now know the price from the quote, and we're going to back into the I percent. It's no harder, but there's one thing you have to make sure you remember to do at the end before you give me an answer. Now, everything else about this bond is perfectly fine, but all you now need to do is go up and replace the PV. And then alpha solve the I percent. So go up to your PV, and now you're going to key in. Don't forget to put it in as a negative. And don't forget to make it a price again. I quoted. So the price there would be, in your calculator, you would key in negative 987.50. 987.50. Don't forget to put it back to a price because the calculator knows prices. Calculator doesn't understand quoting. Now go up to the I percent. Alpha solve. You leave everything else alone. That's the beauty. If you set it up right on the first pass, then the second pass is quite easy. The third question I'll ask you is a joke. Okay, so now we're on the second question. Go up alpha solve on the I percent. You see that number you get? That's a six-month yield. You need to run the cursor over to the end and say times two. If you do that, what do you get for the yield? Say it. 3.96%. Don't forget that last step because you're going to get an answer for that I percent, and there's this just desire to just write that answer down. Times it by two. Because you're doing everything semi-annually, so it's going to report back a semi-annual value to you in the I percent. Don't forget to times it by two. Now, reality check again. Was this bond selling at a premium or a discount to par? It was selling at a discount. See that? It was below 100. Which means the market is saying, you, Mr. Bond, suck. Your coupon is not good enough. So that means that we should expect that the market's saying the coupon should be higher. And sure enough, spank me, Jesus, we got a higher yield to maturity than the coupon rate. It's not proving. One last thing we'll do. JNTC, 3.8%, 85%, 2030 is callable in 2020. What is the yield to call? 3.8%. You got it all set up. All you have to do is go back up to N and change the number of years to the number of years to the call. How many years is it to the call? Times. And then go back down and get the I percent again. Again, all you do for the yield to call, you've got the yield to maturity, so you've got all the information in there exactly right, except now you want to change the year that the bond matures. In this case, we're saying, okay, the bond isn't going to make it to 2030. It's going to mature in 2020. This company's going to call it in 2020. And so what you do is you just go up there and you put in 5 times 2, go back down to I percent, and push the thing alpha saw. And don't forget again, times by 2. Whenever you find an I percent in bonds, times it by 2. When you are finding the I percent, you times it by 2. Whenever you know the I percent, you divide it by 2. Again, when you are finding the I percent, you times the result by 2. If you know the I percent, you divide it by 2 after you push it in. Okay? Now, go back up there. What did you get for the I percent? Times 2. What is it? 4.13. Does that make sense? If it calls, that creates risk for investors. Does risk drive yields down or does risk drive yields up? Up. Did this risk drive the yield up? Well, yes, it did. We can all go home and have milk and cookies now. You got it? Don't blow this problem. It's actually the one that people get the most wrong on the test. You don't have to. That's all I have for you today. I thank you.